is sort of the height of the review, and meaning this whole like opening segment where we're going through this. This is an area where I'm really benefiting from what we discussed in the first semester, because it gave me different ways to do it. We already started on this, I suppose, last time with Safek Pikuach Nefesh, right? So we saw that highest level. And now we're up to Sakanas Eiver. Were there any questions left from Safek Pikuach Nefesh, right? Especially the part that we did at the end, which was a little rushed, about the two kinds of Safek. Does anyone remember what the two kinds of Safek are? There's one that counts and one that doesn't count, so to speak. What are the two kinds of Safek? Rebecca?
Doubt that the person's in danger and doubt that the treatment will work.
Correct. Francesca, which of those is the one that we care about enough to say we're going to violate Shabbos?
Doubt that there's actually danger.
Correct. If I'm not sure whether there's danger, override Shabbos. That's exactly right. If I'm not sure whether this medicine works, now, very important, the definition of unsure matters. In other words, I have a medication which I know works in 50% of people. Do I override Shabbos to use it? Or do I say, well, it doesn't work in 50% of people? The answer is use it. That's not the kind of doubt we're talking about. What we're talking about is, you know, somebody suggested, I know my grandmother used to do X. You have no medical reason to think it works. You have no reports that it works. My grandmother used to do it. That's not going to justify overriding Shabbos. There's a great discussion in the halachic literature, which we will not go into, but I'll mention it. Would you be allowed, if you know that there's a great rabbi in another town who writes amulets for people who are sick, would you be allowed, if someone becomes dangerously ill on Shabbos, to send somebody to another town where this rabbi is to ask him to write an amulet on Shabbos for this person to get better? So that's a real live case in the literature. Today, I would say, no, don't do that. That's not a thing. But that's, you know, that would be an example of something where I'm not really sure that this is effective. Okay. So, bless you. Sakanas Eiver is our next level down in this. Sakanas Eiver, yeah, right.
Sorry, are you able to go over Rascaro from last class with one doctor says it's necessary and another says we don't need it, we violate Shabbos, but then there's a part about the expert that I just didn't get?
So I didn't bring it on the source sheet this time. I can look it up, I guess, on the file that I have on here. Okay, hang on 1 second. I'll open it up on here. Okay, so source number 10. Yeah, and the Shulchan Aruch there. See, the Shulchan Aruch writes, V'mrofei echad omer tzarech, v'mrofei echad omer eino tzarech. One doctor says this person needs to be treated. They're ill. The other one says he doesn't need it. He's you know, I don't think he's in any danger. So in that case, mechallelin, we override Shabbos. That's the first kind of safek. V'yesh mi she'omer she'ein tzarech mumcha. Then as a separate point, he says, some say you do not actually need an expert to say that this person is in danger. T'chol b'nei adam chashuv mumchen k'tzas. Because everybody is considered to be something of an expert. And we're in doubt about a life and death matter, we are going to rule leniently. And therefore, even if I don't have a doctor saying this person needs it, if it seems to me that this person needs it and I'm not a doctor, that's good enough to warrant it. It's a very important point about, you know, practically how we analyze cases, because very often these things happen in the home and there isn't a doctor around and you need to decide whether you're calling an ambulance or not. So the assessment really does fall on the shoulders of someone who is not a mumcha, who's not an expert. So that's a very important point. Okay. Other questions? And again, one more chance to ask something about that quiz that we had that we just reviewed. No? Good? Okay. So, Sakanas Eiver. Sakanas Eiver is, I will write it out on the board in order to give my marker some exercise. So, sakanas means danger of, right? There's a smichut, that's the tough. Aver means? Right, so people say limb, organ, body part. The only right answer, as far as I'm concerned, not that I'm going to like grade you badly for it or whatever, is body part. The reason I say that is because while it's true that you will see translations that say limb or organ, neither of those fits the halachic definition of aver. You may be familiar with the Mishabera for Cholim, in which the version for a male patient says Ramach Evarav, the 248 Evarim. There's actually a different number for males, different number for females. The those are not limbs or organs. Some of them are bones, right? Most of them are bones. Some of them are organs, but if you learn biology, you know we consider skin to be an organ. Skin does not qualify as an aver. So, like, it doesn't really work. Basically, the word aver does not map to a particular English word. It's body part. Yes?
Didn't we mention first semester that aver is something that, like, you would give?
No, I did not. We're going to get to what you're thinking of. Hang in there. I don't want to confuse things by going there right now. That's why I'm cutting you off. I apologize for being rude, but
no.
Yeah. So the definition of an aver is a body part. You do have a Mishnah in Ahalos, which lists the 248 Avarim, but we don't actually make use of that list as a general principle anyway. Instead, if you take a look at source number one, we work with what the Nishmas Avram quotes here from Rav Yehoshua Neuwirth, who was the author of the Shemir Shabbos Kehilchasa. He says, V'yesh makom lomar, there is room to say, Shasakanas Aver Ein Zo Rak Be'ever Adam Meramach Evarim Shebo Ela Kol Chelek Misuyam Shal Guf HaAdam. He says, and I'm pausing in the reading there on purpose. He says there's room to say that Aver does not mean one of the 248 that's in the Mishnah in Ahalos, but rather any distinct component, I like the way I translated it here, I'm going to go with that. Any distinct component of the human body. So anything that we consider to be a unique, separate part of the body of a person. That's the definition of the word aver. We're going to get to a particular example eventually. We're going to talk about the question of whether a tooth counts as an aver. Teeth are neither limbs nor organs. They're a distinct part of the body, or maybe they're not. Maybe they're part of the jaw, but we'll talk about that. So, aver is defined now. It's a part of the body, a distinct part of the body, not just those on the 248, as brought this opinion brought in Rav Neuwirth. In terms of sakana, so sakana means danger, sakanat, danger of. So danger can mean different things. And here it means what Bailey was going to say. It's the second half of source number one. Asher im lo yitaplu bo ka'et. Such that if you don't treat it right now, yesh chashash sheyetze mi pe'ulaso, there is a concern that it will cease to function. Gamze nikra b'shem sakanas aver, that's also called danger to an aver, even though it's not on the list of the 248. So if the aver will no longer function as it normally does, that's sakanas aver. So this is not about threat to life at this stage. Right? You can imagine the following case. A person has an injury to their hand, and if their hand is not treated, then it won't function anymore. There is something, you know, there's a broken bone and it's displaced, and if you don't set it properly, their hand is not going to work the way it used to work before. That could legitimately, under this definition, be called sakanas aver. Clear? Yes, Michal.
I have like a sort of a what if case. Like, let's say someone doesn't have feeling in the hand or a leg, and then they come across, they I don't know, get cut really badly. That if not treated, they won't. Their function stays the same.
So then it's not sakanas aver. I don't understand. Meaning, what would be the dysfunction afterwards?
Like, let's say someone doesn't have feeling in like their leg.
Okay.
So, and then they end up getting caught on their leg.
Yes.
So, in a regular case, for someone who has feeling in their leg, bad cut that like has to, or it's dislocated or something.
Okay.
That you could lose the function that you would have had, a regular function. But if someone already doesn't have regular function.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay, now I understand what you mean. The no, that's still sakanas eber.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. It's not that it had to be at 100% beforehand in order to be qualified for sakana saver. If it was at 80% beforehand and now it's going to be at 60%, that's also sakana saver. Yeah. So the challenge here is going to be how do I read sakana saver? Where does sakana saver fit into the hierarchy of illnesses, and we're going to see two different ways to look at it. I'll explain what that means in a bit, but first we're going to see the Gemara that is the basis for saying we override Shabbos for Sakanas Eiver. Okay? But you know what? Let me give you the question now, actually. I think it actually does make sense to put the question now, and you'll think about it as we read the Gemara. Our hierarchy, right? We have Pikuach Nefesh, which includes Safek Pikuach Nefesh. And then we have Chole She'ein Bo Sakana, someone who we say is ill, but their life is not in danger. And then I have this category called Sakanas Eiver, for which we're going to be willing to violate certain aspects of Shabbos. My question to you is Sakanas Eiver part of Pikuach Nefesh? Or is Sakanas Eiver part of Chole She'ein Bo Sakana? This idea that their leg, their arm, their whatever, is not going to function properly in the future, right? The question comes up regarding fertility treatments on Shabbos. Let's say they need a treatment, and that treatment is going to enable their reproductive system to function properly. So are we saying there's a threat to them that is considered the equal of being a threat to life? Because they won't have this functioning body part? Or do we say that it's like Chole She'ein Bo Sakana, they have an illness. Their life is not in danger, but they're genuinely ill. Which way do I look at it? Matters, because for Pikuach Nefesh, I can override basically anything. Chole She'ein Bo Sakana does not justify overriding anything. It overrides certain things, as we're going to discuss. So which category is Sakanas Eiver in? Is the question we're going to have to talk about. Daniela and then Rebecca.
Does it matter how, like, where in fertility treatment the person is? Because if embryo created, you can, like, argue what that is.
So I'm not at all discussing the fertility treatment case. I just mentioned it because I think it's a good example for people to think about. But it's not, it's such an in-depth topic that really, like, I think first semester I started on it and said, oh, that was a bad idea. So this time I'm just mentioning it. I'm not even starting on it. But the issue would not be the embryo. The issue I'm talking about is now their reproductive system is not operational. They need certain treatments to make it operational for them earlier than the embryo stage. Rebecca.
If we're translating AMR as any distinct body part, then biologically it can't fall into any one category. It's very, like, case dependent.
Yes.
Because, like, a danger to one part of the body is not going to necessarily, like, ruin everything, and you might be considered a Chole She'ein Bo Sakana, whereas a danger to a different part of your body could end up being Pikuach Nefesh.
Correct.
So then, is it okay to say that it just doesn't fall into one category, and that it's case dependent?
Maybe. Right now, it's a maybe. It's a good question. We just need to see more in order to know where that's going to go. But it's the right question to ask, Leah.
Is there like an in between, like Chole She'ein Bo Sakana?
Chole She'ein Bo Sakana is Pikuach
Nefesh.
Correct. Correct. Literally, someone who is dangerously ill. Okay. So, what we need to see is a key Gemara in source number 2. This is the basis for the whole discussion of Sakanas Eiver. Amar Rav Zutra Bar Tuvia Amar Rav. Rav Zutra Bar Tuvia quotes Rav, saying the following. Ayin Shem Marda. If an eye revolts, an eye rebels. If you were to learn the full Gemara, not just the part that we're seeing, you'd see a discussion of, is it leaking fluid? Is it that there's just like unstoppable crying? Is it that the eye is about to fall out, which is gross? That's its own discussion. But right now, we're just saying if the eye revolts, mutar lekochla b'shabbat, you are allowed to treat it with kechol on Shabbos. In Hebrew, kechol is... blue. Sorry. That was a different answer back there?
Yeah.
Okay, kachol is blue. What they're talking about here seems to be, this is the way I heard it many, many, many years ago, I think it was when I took Arabic at YU, that kachol actually is an alcohol-based blue dye slash ointment. And the term alcohol is an Arabic term. Al-kuhla is alcohol. I mean, you know, like algebra, right? Algebra, yeah. People know. So alcohol also is al-kuhla. And this kachol that we're talking about using was some kind of an alcohol-based ointment that they used to treat the eye. It happened to be blue, and so you get kachol. I don't know. That's what I heard from Professor Richard White many years ago. So he says, Ayin shamarda mutar lekochla b'Shabbos. You are allowed to treat your eye with this ointment on Shabbos. Now, the concern in treating with an ointment would be it's medication on Shabbos. And we've said you don't do medication on Shabbos. We're overriding that for this eye. Savar mine. Now, right now, what that means is it sounds like I'm overriding a derabanan, right? But the Gemara says no. Savar mine, hani milihu deshachki samanim me'esmo. Savor like svara. I would have thought that the case we're talking about is where the kachol was prepared before Shabbos. The ingredients were ground up. It's only the derabanan issue. Avo mishchak b'Shabbos v'asuye derech reshus harabim lo. But you would not be allowed to grind up ingredients on Shabbos. You would not be allowed to bring the ointment via a public domain at reshus harabim. In other words, I would have thought the only thing we're allowing is a derabanan. We're overriding the gzera for medication. I would not have thought that you were allowed to violate a deoraisa in order to treat this eye. That would have been my assumption. Is everyone clear? Including people who are typing a lot? Yes, Danielle.
This is still Rav's original statement.
So this is the narrator in the Gemara. Yeah, the Gemara itself is speaking and saying, I would have thought the permission that Rav gave was only about derabanans. That, okay, so the eye is tearing really badly. Maybe this is a bad thing. Let's call a chole shein bo sakana and call it a day. They're chole, but their knife isn't in danger, right? Their eye is having issues. Amar lehahu me rabbanan v'rabbi Yaakov shmei. However, one of the rabbis said, you know, maybe the speaker was Rav Zutra Bar Tuvia, actually. Could be the speaker was Rav Zutra Bar Tuvia, who was the one who quoted Rav. That could be. So one of the rabbanan responds, his name is Rabbi Yaakov, and he says, no. Lididi mifresha mine de Rav Yehuda. I learned from Rav Yehuda. Remember, Rav Yehuda was a student of Rav as well as Shmuel, so he has a mesora from Rav. I learned from Rav, from Rav Yehuda, I should say. Afilu mishchak b'Shabbes ve'asuye derech rishus harabim mutar. You would even be allowed to grind up ingredients on Shabbos. That's a deoraisa. You would even be allowed to transport the ingredients via Rishus HaRabim, via public domain. That's a de'oraisa. My time, oh, why? De'shuraini de'ena be'uvnasa de'liba talu. Because the nerves of the eye, I'm taking liberties by translating shuraini as nerves, but others do. It's unclear what shuraini refers to. It's a biological term in Aramaic. We don't have necessarily an exact analogy. But he says, the nerves of the eye are linked to the fat around the heart. The nerves of the eye are linked to the fat around the heart. So what he's suggesting is, if something's going wrong with the eye, it could relate to something wrong with the heart. And therefore you treat it on Shabbos. That's the argument he's making, which goes back to what Rebecca was suggesting. Sorry? Your bio brain doesn't know enough, because there actually is a bio issue here. Did your bio brain familiar with the oculocardiac reflex? By the way, that was rude. I shouldn't have said it that way. Sorry, I apologize. Are you familiar with the oculocardiac reflex? So Dr. Yaakov Levy wrote an article in 1975. It's what I referenced there with a link, so you can look it up in source number 3 in the journal Hamayan. There is something called the oculocardiac reflex, and it's I who did not take serious bio, understand it. The nerves around the eye are indeed connected to the system around the heart, such that EMTs actually will have a method, or so I'm told by EMTs, of slowing a person's heart rate by pressing on the area around the eye. So that could be what they had observed. You googled it, yeah.
How did they know that in the Gemara?
Because their medicine was by observation. They noticed things. You know, remember, medicine historically, go back to the Greek times, was empirical, right? You observed something and you wrote it down, and that's how you also get with things like, you know, amulets working. Because, well, it looked like the amulet was what did it, even if, you know, you didn't have a theory to understand what was really going on. So yes, that seems to be what they're talking about here. There was a hand, golly, was it you?
Yeah. This is also implying that the only reason you could violate Shabbos is because this is like pikuach nefesh, because it's about your heart. So if it's like any other limb, it's
good.
So
this makes it sound like the reason why you're allowed to violate Shabbos in this way, on a Raisa level, is only because of the heart. But a general sakanas aver will not warrant violating a de'oraisa. That's what it sounds like.
Yeah.
I'm going to come back to that, because that's one way to read it. It's not the only way to read it, but it's definitely a way to read it, and it is the way most mefarshim read it, is the way you're reading it. Ray.
Is it that the eye problem is indicative of a heart problem, and that if you see a problem with the eye, there's something wrong with the heart, or is that if there's a problem with the eye, it will lead to something with the heart?
I don't know. It's a good question, but that is a question for a bio person. I don't know. The question here is, how do I read Rabbi Yaakov's permission, Rabbi Yaakov's permission, of De'oraisas in this case? And there are two ways you can read it legitimately. Approach number one, this is not Gali's approach, this is the non-Gali approach. Approach number one says, Sakanas Eiver is a threat to life. It is Pikuach Nefesh. We treat Sakanas Eiver as Pikuach Nefesh automatically. That's why he permits it. Why would that be? Because, going back to Rebecca's point before, it could lead to a threat to the body as a whole. That's one way to look at Sakanas Eiver. If you take a look on your sheet at Rav David Tzvi Hoffman in source number 4, his Malamed Lahoil, he says, Dimasha nemar ba'ayin, that which is stated regarding the eye, yesh lamar b'sha'ar evarim. You could also say that for other body parts. D'talu b'yachad, because they're all together, they're linked together, m'ever sha'achiyus taloi ba, with a body part which life really does depend on. The kevin d'savik nefashos docha Shabbos, and since if I'm not sure about a life-saving issue, at overwrite Shabbos, so we should always say, Sakanas Eiver. I don't know what's going on. There might be a threat to life. Override Shabbos. That's one school of thought in reading the Gemara. And even though the Gemara gave me the example of the eye is linked to the heart, that was non-specific. It wasn't only about the eye and the heart. That happened to be the case they were discussing here in the Gemara. But it could just as easily have given me, you know, X body part is related to the liver, is related to the kidney, is something else that we consider to be important for a person's survival. Bailey.
Sorry, I just figured something before you mentioned Rabbi David Tzvi Hoffman.
What I had said was that this approach says Sakanas Eiver is always Pikuach Nefesh, or Safek Pikuach Nefesh, and therefore we will override the Oraisas for it. So this is the way the Meiri reads the Gemara. If you take a look at source number 5, Rabbi Menachem Meiri says the following. Uktsas mefarshim. He says some commentators, if you ever learn Meiri, and not many of you have spent any real time on the Meiri, but if you ever read the Meiri likes to skip names. And instead he gives people identifiers. And I don't know why he does that, but he does. So they're like nicknames. I don't know who he means when he says Ktsas Mefarshim, but further along here, he's going to quote Gedolei Harabanim. When the Meiri says Gedolei Harabanim, he means Rashi. When he says Gedolei HaMechabrim, he means the Rambam. Like, it's just a thing. why, again, I don't know what the reason was for doing it. But look what he says. Uktsas mafarshim kolim bazeh. She'inyan ze nemar davka b'choli she'arofei makir bo she'yesh sham sakanas haguf. He says some commentators generalize from this case and say that it's specifically where the doctor knows that there's a threat to life. Just like the eye and the heart case. The eye and the heart case is specific. Ukmo she'nemar atambo, like the reason given here, she'gidei ha'ayin b'chalal haguf heim mishtarshim. That the sinews of the eye, which could refer to the nerves of the eye, all are rooted inside the body. Klomar sheyesh sham sakana laguf. There's a threat to the body. Avacholi she'ein sham sakana laguf. But if it's an illness that does not involve a threat to life, ava pishiyesh bo sakana le'inyan hefsed haraus. Even if it would potentially cause loss of vision, ein shochkin es hamanim b'shabbos. You would not grind up the ingredients on Shabbos. He's bringing the other view right now. He's not bringing his own view. He's saying there is a view that says, the only reason we're doing de'oraisas, 1 second, Francesca, the only reason we're doing de'oraisas is because we know about the eye-heart connection and we know that the ayin shamarda poses a potential threat in terms of the heart. And as Sarah asked, how does that work? Someone else asked, how does that work? Is it the eye causing it to the heart? Is it just that it's a symptom of what's going on in the heart? I don't know. Francesca, you were going to say?
Never mind.
Okay. Va'af gedolei harabanim, and also the gedolei harabanim, by which he means Rashi, kasvu, they wrote, savermina, hani mili deshchiki me esmol, aval mishkak lechatchilo lo, mipnei she'em bo sakanas nefesh, ela sakanas ivaron, that until you told me that the eye is linked to the heart, I thought you could only do derabanans, you could use medicine, which was pre-ground, because there's no threat to life, there's a threat to vision. Ve'ein hadvarim nirin. But he says, presumably no pun intended, Einadram near in. This does not appear to be correct. Some people got it. The Ella af besarkanas ever echod mechalalin. He says, I don't think so. I think even if there's a threat to one ever, we would override Shabbos. Velo amru shuraini de ena beliba talu elalomar shehevsit sakanas ever krovalavo. The only reason why they mentioned this business of the eye being linked to the heart is to say that a threat to one's overall health can quickly come about from a threat to one aver. That's what the Meiri is suggesting. By the way, just to say this, and I'm not going to open it up as a big discussion, but it is worth noting, the question of sakana to vision and whether I view danger to vision as sakanas aver or as pikuach nefesh is its own discussion. Meaning, a person who can't see will not necessarily be automatically subject to some biological harm, like their eyes don't work, therefore their heart doesn't work. However, they are now overall in great danger because inability to see, especially in their world, which was much less accessible, could constitute a threat to life. People who were blind had a natural risk to their health. So that's its own discussion, which we're not going into. I'm just pointing out that vision is actually a more complicated issue than the Meiri is presenting it right now. So that's all. That's approach number one. Approach number one is the Meiri's conclusion, which is to say a threat to any aver is a potential threat to life and therefore is treated like safek pikuach nefesh automatically, and you could violate the oraisas. Yes, Sarah? Admittedly, it's hard to say this for a tooth. We're going to talk about whether tooth really is included or not. That's something we have to discuss. But part of it may involve how one loses the body part, right? I mean, if a finger is amputated, in sterile conditions and so on, the bleeding is treated, then, yeah, presumably they'll live. They'll be miserable, but they'll live. On the other hand, there are lots of ways to lose a finger, and not all of them fit that description. And they could indeed constitute a real threat to life, whether due to infection or blood loss. So this is first approach. The second approach is the dominant approach. And the second approach is the one that the Meiri rejected, which says, this case here is unique. The eye link to the heart is not found in every case of sakanas eiver. And the way they look at it is, sakanas eiver really just means you're going to be in a lot of pain. A person loses a body part, they're in pain. Sorry, we did not say. Right now I'm just explaining the idea. Sakanas eiver is a case of great pain. And it's more like, to go back to the board, chole she'ein bo sakana, someone who's ill, but their life isn't in danger. And therefore, we will not violate the oraisas. We will violate the rabbanans. So that is the dominant view. If you take a look at source number 6, Rabbi Rafael Evers, writing in Holland, says, V'nira lefiyani is daiti, it appears in my humble opinion, Be'er hadavar, the following is the explanation, Degabe chole she'en bo sakana. That's a neat acronym, by the way, for those who are following the Hebrew. Chole she'en bo sakana, somebody who is ill but not dangerously so. Hatsar huzmani, the pain is temporary. V'cholef ve'over lachar zman, and it goes away after a while. V'harafua hukdei lahatzilo mizeh, the point of curing this person is because they don't want to be in pain, so you want to get rid of the pain. V'azailo hitiru lavral iser shavus, but for this they did not permit even violating a derabanan, meaning when we get to Cholashein Bo Sakana, we're going to say you could violate derabanan, but only with a shinui, in an unusual way. We'll talk about that. Masha'in came b'sakanas eiver, as opposed to a threat to a body part, hachisaron ye olamit, you lose it, it's gone, it's not growing back. And in parentheses, he says, I'll call panim, but adam mevugar, at least if you're talking about somebody who is older. It could be. There are certain things that will regenerate in somebody who's younger. V'yishar ba'almum la'olam b'li ha'rafua. And they will be a ba'almum. They will be missing something forever without any cure. Al-keni tiru shvus al-yidei yisrael ha'tzilo mizeh. So therefore, they were more lenient than with chole she'en bo sakana. They're willing to permit straight derabanan, which... We didn't get to Chol Hashem Bo Sakana yet, so this distinction is a little bit meaningless. But what he's saying is, we treat it as like Chol Hashem Bo Sakana, but a step above Chol Hashem Bo Sakana. Chol Hashem Bo Sakana, we will allow certain things, not full violation of a derabanan. Sakana Sever, we will allow full violation of a derabanan. That last bit... See, I didn't want to go too far with this because it's going to create confusion, but maybe it's creating confusion anyway, in which case I should just go for it. What do you think? You want to be more confused or less confused?
Say it all.
Say it all. Okay, fine. So I oversimplified when I said Sakana Sever is either treated like Pikuach Nefesh or treated like Chole Shein Bo Sakana. The first part of it is accurate. We're treating Sakana Sever like Pikuach Nefesh. That's straightforward. But we're not really going to equate it with Chole Shein Bo Sakana. Rather, this is Rabbi Evers' point, we give it one step above Chol Hashein Bo Sakana. When we talk about Chol Hashein Bo Sakana, which is our next topic after Sakana Zever, Chol Hashein Bo Sakana, we are going to say, allows you to violate a derabanan as long as you do something to reduce the gravity of violating that derabanan. So one thing you can do is ask a non-Jew to violate the derabanan instead of you. Another thing you can do is to violate it with a shinui in an unusual way. So Chol Hashein Bo Sakana does not really allow violating full derabanans. It allows you to violate a reduced derabanan. Whereas, we're going to see, we didn't see it yet, but within this school of thought, Sakanas Eiver, you could violate even a full derabanan. Bikuach nefesh, you can violate a de'oraisa. So what Rabbi Evers is saying is, why is it that with Sakanas Eiver you can violate more than with Chol Hashein Bo Sakana? If they're really both people who are sick and their life is not in danger, why can you do more for Sakanas Eiver? And his answer is, because living with a body part that's not coming back is worse than Chol Hashein Bo Sakana. That's really bad. And therefore, we'll let you violate full derabanans. Does everyone understand that? Is that clear? Do you regret having asked me to clarify further?
No.
Okay. So that's the point that the Rabbi Evers makes here. if you take a look at source number 7, you'll see the Rush take this view of our Gemara. He says, Shaminan mehacha, we learn from here, from our Gemara. Dimashu sakanas ever ein mechalin olav es haShabbos beisir deoraisa. If something is a threat to a body part, we will not override Shabbos with a biblical prohibition. Avo beisir derabanan mechalin, but we would with a rabbinic one. The I-heart case is unique because there I know that it's actually a threat to life. But my assumption in general with sakanas ever is that it's not. My assumption in general is that it's only you know, uncomfortable, painful, and therefore you violated the Rabbanan. Rabbeinu Nisim also, I just brought you a second source to go with the Rush, but he's saying the same thing. In source number 8, Mehasham Inam, we learn from here, Demishum sakanas ever echad ein mechalanes haShabbos, elim kein yesh bedavar sakanas misa. We learn from here that for danger to one ever we will not override Shabbos unless there's a threat of death. The taima de shuraini de ena beliba talu. That the reason there why we would do it for the eye is because of the eye heart connection. One more source to see that's vital here. It's the Gemara in Ksuvos. Source number 9. The Gemara in Ksuvos, I didn't bring you the whole Gemara because it would take us way too far afield. I brought you the one line that's germane for us. Bimakom tsara lo gazru rabbanan. Rabbinic decrees are not created for cases in which they will cause pain. Now, sometimes they are created to cause pain, effectively, right? We talked about this last time. The fasting, for example, a rabbinic fast day causes pain. So you can't tell me, well, I'm overriding that because I'm hungry. That doesn't work that way. However, where a normal rabbinic decree, is not something that should cause pain, but in this particular circumstance it does, the Drabbanan will be overridden. And what we're saying is, Sakanas Eiver is sufficient to override Drabbanans fully, as opposed to Chol HaShem Bo Sakana, which overrides them to a certain extent. That's the idea. Is that clear? Yes, Francesca.
Can you explain
source 9,
like what the relevance is?
Yeah. Source 9 is the halachic underpinning to explain why we're willing to override anything for Sakanas Eiver. Meaning, Shabbos is, as we spent a lot of time on our first class, or sometime anyway on in our first class, Shabbos is really, really important. It is the sign of our relationship with Hashem. It is the holiest of all days. It carries a death penalty. I understand overriding Shabbos for Pikuach Nefesh, but why are you overriding Shabbos for anything other than Pikuach Nefesh? The answer is, because when you're dealing with Derabbanans are not meant for cases in which they're causing someone great pain. You follow? That's the idea. That Gemara is very important for us. It's true of all Derabbanans. It's not just about Hilchos Shabbos. It's true overall. Okay. So I want to give you a short break before we continue. Just let people breathe a little bit. Take 3 minutes, but like 3 minutes sharp, okay? Because we have stuff to do. Okay, thanks. All right. So hopefully people can, come back to where we were. We follow the view that says that we permit derabbanans, that the case of Sakanas Eiver is more like Chol HaShe'en Bo Sakana. We're going to see that in a line in Shulchan Aruch that I'm not bringing yet because it really will confuse everybody. The evidence for that will be seen, God willing, on Monday. But we don't need it yet, and so there's no reason to throw everybody off. But I do want to note something that I think, Natalie, we were talking about before class, and that is source number 10. Rabbi Eliezer Melamed is a leading halachic authority in Israel today, and he makes a point. He says, "Lemaaseh, in practice, das harofeim kayom, the view of doctors today is she'ein kimat matzav shesakanas ever lo tagia lesakanas nefashos al yedei har Allah uchedome, is that there's almost no case of danger to somebody's Eiver that could not reach Sakanas nefasho is danger to life because of issues of infection. Right? Meaning, if a body part dies, you know, unless you're talking about amputation, there's dead tissue. Bad things can happen as a consequence. V'chein muvav nishmas Avram, and so is brought as well in Rabbi Dr. Avram Sofer Abraham's Nishmas Avram. So he's not changing the rules of Sakanas Eiver itself, but he's saying Sakanas Eiver may actually be pikuach nefesh. To some extent, it will depend on how broadly you go with the definition of Eiver. Right? If Eiver is a tooth, is this really true? I should note that there has been medical research that connects, this is going to bother all the bio brain people all over again, that connects the heart with gums, with periodontics. I believe some of it has been debunked. Sorry?
Diabetes,
right, but there the gums are a symptom of it, no? Not as a root from it?
I think it's like a symptom if you're not treated.
Right.
Yeah.
But I think that they talk about the gums as a potential point of infection in the body and that potentially causing harm. Sorry?
I need to know who in here is body.
Yeah. But again, I mean, some of those studies have been debunked. My point is only to say that the actual practical application of saying this is Sakanas Eiver and not a threat to life may be limited. That's what I'm getting at. That's what Rabbi Melamed is getting at. Clear? Yeah.
He's saying like Sakanas Eiver is always in the Pikuach Nefesh?
He doesn't quite say always, but he's leaning towards that, right? He says almost no case, which means that he's going to want you to err on the side of caution and say safe pikuach nefesh. You know, that seems to be where he's going. So, yeah, sorry.
But does that mean that it's going to be like an immediate threat to life? Like, does it have to be treated on Shabbat or
right.
Wait one day?
Good. So that goes back to an earlier discussion I think we had, right, where we said that pikuach nefesh includes cases that are not immediately a threat but could become a threat, so long as treatment is required on Shabbos in order to prevent that threat. So if I have, you know, somebody who comes in with a cut that came about from rusty metal, so tetanus is a threat. Technically speaking, they're not going to die on Shabbos from their tetanus. However, the tetanus will spread in the course of Shabbos if I don't treat it, and after Shabbos, their life is going to be in danger because I didn't treat it today, then I'm going to say treat it now. Don't wait till after Shabbos and say, oh, don't worry about it, we'll look at you then. So it's a little tricky in terms of implementation, but that's the answer. Yes, Rebecca.
What if your use of that Eiver is in danger temporarily? So like if you get shot, like I think it's like what, 10 shots or whatever, that like hurt your arm and like sometimes it like blows up, gets red, and like you can't move your arm for like 2 days.
Right.
Would that be considered like an Eiver?
Right.
You know, it's only for like a little bit.
Right, so I don't believe so. I think Sakanas Eiver means permanent dysfunction, not temporary. Okay, so I just wanted to bring you the teeth example because it's a fascinating discussion. I'm doing it briefer than we did it first semester. If you take a look at source number 11, this is an article, Dental Emergencies on the Sabbath from the Journal of Halakha and Contemporary Society. People are familiar with the Journal of Halakha and Contemporary Society? Yes, also known as the RJJ Journal. Although I don't think RJJ publishes it anymore, but they have neat articles. Sometimes the editing needs work, but the footnotes are notoriously wrong. I don't know if that's true for the modern version of it, the classic. It went through a period where it wasn't published, and then they brought it back. So I don't know if it's true for the new wave of this journal, but the old wave of the journal, you would always have to look up a footnote because it was often not where they said it was. In any case, Rabbi Dr. Moshe Tendler, Dr. Fred Rosner. Since the jaw is an aver, and the absence of teeth interferes with its proper functioning, and since the reimplantation of those teeth would restore the proper functioning of the jaw, the traumatic avulsion of teeth, that means if the teeth come out, represents a situation of chesron aver. They consider that to be a case of loss of an aver if you lose a tooth, and therefore you would be allowed to override the rabbanans in order to get the tooth back into place. It is derabbanans. You'd be allowed to override a derabbanan in order to get the tooth back into place. Yes.
Do they distinguish between baby teeth and like?
Yeah, they mean adult teeth. They don't mean the baby tooth because again, they'll be able to function. It's just.
Yeah. Thank you.
Sure. On the other hand, the Netziv, Rabbi Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin, and others, but I just brought him as an example, disagreed and said, no, this doesn't count. He quotes you the Gemara in source number 12, Hachoshish b'shinav lo yigameya b'enes hachometz. If you have a toothache, you're not supposed to rinse your mouth with vinegar. And this is, I think we actually saw this once before. The point here is that even though vinegar is something that people use as a food, gargling with it is not, doesn't look like eating to anybody. So therefore, you're not allowed to gargle with it. So he says, Hiksha echo ben achaverim sheyechia. One of the students asked, Del mahavi sakanas aver. Maybe that is danger to an aver. If you have a toothache, maybe something's wrong with the tooth. Venera ledaik mikan de sakanas aver eno ela sheeno yachol lamal os chesrono. De afilu ayin achas vade sheno doma lareia de shteyenaim. He says, sakanas aver is where there's going to be a deficiency that you can't make whole. So if a person loses an eye, they have another eye, but seeing with one eye is not the same thing as seeing with two eyes, right? What do you lose if you can only see with one eye? Well, that's a reduction of the field, but something else. Depth perception, exactly. You can't tell how distant things are. You need to triangulate using the vision from both eyes. Yeah, try it sometime. Close one eye and see. But don't try it while you're crossing the street or driving. The aval kisha chaser lo shein echad. But he says if you lose a tooth, adayin mishtalei meleches hatachina b'shar shinav. The other teeth are able to chew, right? Even if you lose, you know, one of your serious chewing teeth, you're still going to be able to eat. No one's starving because they lost one tooth. That's what the Netziv says. Some others note also that we have options for artificial teeth, like all sorts of ways to fill it in. So therefore, it's harder to argue that loss of a tooth is actually sakanas aver. But I will note, that isn't challenging the idea that a tooth is an aver. It's challenging the idea that this is actually creating dysfunction for the body. So potentially you could argue for reduced Rabbanan when we talk Chol Shembo Sakana, which is coming up right now. We'll have to see. Okay, we now understand what's involved in Sakana's Aver. We have achieved something today. Excellent. So let's start with Chol Shembo Sakana now. Chol Shembo Sakana is definitely not a life or death situation. It is Chole, someone who is bona fide ill. They're really sick, but ein bo sakana, they're not in danger of losing their life. So it's not just any person who doesn't feel well. It is somebody who is chole. I mentioned this the other day, but I want to stress it. And what I'll do, I think, is go back to the point that Leah made before, which is reframing pikuach nefesh. Instead of using the term pikuach nefesh, using the term chole. Try that again. Chole sheyesh bo sakana. Okay? So that shows you the parallel. Chole sheyesh bo sakana, chole she'ein bo sakana. Both cases in which there is a real machala, there's a real illness. Chole sheyesh bo sakana is dangerously ill, that's pikuach nefesh. Chole she'ein bo sakana, they're not in danger. They're really sick, but they're not going to die from whatever it is that they have. If I think they might, I'm not sure, then it's safei pikuach nefesh all over again, right? But that's not the case. So this is somebody who is actually ill, but not deathly so. Why does that matter? Because the justification to override Shabbos came from what source? In the Gemara Numa. What was the answer? How do I know that you override Shabbos? Oh, you are in so trouble. That's going to be like the only question on the next quiz. How do I know that you override Shabbos? Yeah? V'chai b'hem. Exactly. These are the mitzvos, and you shall live by them. And therefore, you override Shabbos in the event that it's a threat to life. But this isn't a threat to life. V'chai b'hem has no bearing on a chol she'ein bo sakana. You follow? So therefore, there's no justification in breaking the araisas. maybe violation of derabanans, because we said that was the Gemara in Ksuvos in source number 9, that in a case of tsar, we're not going to apply derabanans. So that we have to see. But not to override the oraisas. Is that clear? We understand? Okay. There's a key case in the Gemara that will help us to understand this. It's source number 13. Shabbos Kuf Chaf Tes Amud Aleph, 129a. It's talking about a woman who gave birth. And it says the following. Shloshim, within 30 days after giving birth. I skipped the part of the Gemara that talks about a woman who has given birth in the last 7 days. That is considered to be... I'm sorry? Correct. That's Cholesh Yesh Bo Sakana. We're now somebody who's after day 7 up to day 30. So afilu amrat sricha ani, ein mechal in alas haShabbos. Even if she says I need X, we will not override the oraisas for her. Aval, however, osin al yedei aramoi, we will do it via a non-Jew. The prohibition against having a non-Jew do malacha for you on Shabbos is a derabanan. So we will override that derabanan for her. Kid Rav Ula, Breid Rav Eloi, like Rav Ula, son of Rav Eloi, who said, Damar, called Sarche Chola Nasin al Yedei Aramoi B'Shabbos. Any of the needs of a person who is ill can be done via a non-Jew on Shabbos. Uchad Rav Hamnuna, and like Rav Hamnuna, Damar Rav Hamnuna, Davar She'ein Bo Sakana, Omer L'Nachri V'Osef. There's no danger involved. You tell a non-Jew, and they do it. Clear? Now, here's where things get complicated. Nothing we've said yet this year is complicated, but this is complicated. Not all derabanans are the same. We think of it as, the rabbi said it, it's a derabanan, but it's not true. Example, certain things are gezeros that are meant to keep you from violating a deoraisa. So, I'll give you an example. Mide oraisa, putting out a fire on Shabbos, right? Extinguishing a flame. When is that biblically prohibited? Mechabe in Hebrew. When is that biblically prohibited? If you do it for a particular purpose, right? If you extinguish a flame in order to be able to light a flame, it's in a constructive way. So I extinguish it in order to be able to use the wick or to use the oil for another flame. That's a deoraisa. But if I put it out because it's annoying me, because I don't want light in the room, that's a derabanan. Why is it usher at all? In order to keep me from violating a deoraisa. Got it? That's one kind of a derabanan. One kind of a derabanan is lest you violate a deoraisa. On the other hand, you have some derabanans which are a thing unto themselves. An example of that, potentially muktza, meant to preserve the atmosphere of Shabbos. Another example of that, amira la'akum, telling a non-Jew to do things for you on Shabbos that you're not allowed to do. That's a derabanan which stands on its own. The derabanans that stand on their own tend to be viewed as more lenient than the derabanans that are meant to protect the deoraisa. So even if I'm telling you here, you're allowed to tell a non-Jew to do things for this woman between day 7 and day 30 after she gave birth, that doesn't mean all derabanans are going to be okay. That's what I'm trying to say. You follow? Not a chance.
Just that one sentence.
The fact that we're willing to say that between day 7 and day 30, you're able to tell a non-Jew to do things for her on Shabbos, does not mean we're going to allow all derabanans. Okay. But this case gives us the opening for understanding that someone who is ill but not in danger, you do have the ability to violate certain things. So look back at source number 13 again. We opened with the case of the woman who gave birth, right? But then we expanded. We quoted Rav Ula Breid Rav Eloi, and we quoted Rav Hamnuna. Were they talking only about the woman who gave birth?
No.
No. They did not say that at all. They just said, a chole, someone who is ill. So it doesn't have to be a woman who just gave birth. So take a look at the Rashba in source number 14, because this is really the key. It also will be seen in number 15, but start with number 14. The Rashba writes, Veheve yodeya, he says, you should know, Shelo hitiru dvarim halalu klal, ella, bedavar sheyesh mimenu choli l'chol gufo shel adam. These things are permitted only if there is choli, illness, for a person's entire body. Kigon, for example, chaya kol shloshim, the woman who gave birth through her 30 days. Inami b'sakanas ever echad, or danger to one body part. V'chein mikchol eina b'sof uchla upatzuchei eina. I'm not going to go into the case that he describes there with an eye. It's not necessary for us. It'll just take time. The key is what I bolded there. Shu nofel lamishkav. Ochole umitzta'er mimenu. A person is nofel lamishkav. They are bedridden. Or they are ill and they are in pain from it. Avachoshesh v'hu mischazek v'holech kabari. But if he has an ache, but he's able to strengthen himself and walk around like he's healthy, ain't matirin lo afilu shvus shel divrehem. We would not even permit a derabanan vafilu al yidei goy, even by having a non-Jew do it. Velo od ela bedavar she'ein ba malacha velo klum ba'olam gazu mishum shnikas samanim. And even where, there's nothing wrong with it. It's just medication that was pre-ground. We don't even allow that for someone who's lower than this level. Is that clear, or did I read it too fast? For someone who's lower than Chol Hashem Bo Sakana. Chol Hashem Bo Sakana can take medicine. Anyone whose illness is less than that is not able to, unless with the exceptions that we already have discussed. Rabbeinu Nisim in source number 15. Yes, Rebecca.
Is he saying that
Sakana Eder would
be considered Chol Hashem
Bo Sakana? So he's lumping.
Correct.
He seems to be lumping it in with Chol Hashem Bo Sakana, even though, as we're going to see, we distinguish. Correct. Rabbeinu Nisim, in source number 15, the last source we'll do, says, Umistabra, logically, dikishari lanami al yidei goy, when we say you can have a non-Jew do this malacha, biblically prohibited malacha, hanimili b'choleshu nofel machmas cholyo lemishkav. It refers to somebody who is bedridden due to the illness. Note, by the way, bedridden due to the illness. Not that they're bedridden for some other reason. They're bedridden because of the illness. But not if the person is able to get up and walk around. That's not. So what we're going to do next time, God willing, is pick up from here with what the Shulchan Aruch does to define Chol Hashein Bo Sakana. What definition do they use? We will see a couple of examples of what qualifies, including the fever point that poor Susan had in our vignette. And then we'll talk about what's justified for treating it and the unique status of children. That will all be in the discussion. And then after that, we think we'll have a quiz. So there might be a quiz on Monday on Sakanas Eiver and Chol Hashem Bo Sakana. We'll see.
Thank you.
Have a good Shabbos.